introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
All right. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. It is another episode of the Pocket Protectors Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And we have the full crew here once again. Doctor, how's it going, man? How you doing?
Man, things are good. Week three of the NFL season, week four of college season. We're in full swing, man. Can't, you know, been fun.
And how's all that going, man? You know, I don't envy you. I feel like the NFL game, as crazy as hectic as things are in the pro game, it feels like there's a lot less variability in the NFL than in college. And you guys have jumped headlong into the madness that is college football. How is that going, man?
Yeah, man. So, like, for example, the crazy thing is we've been printing picks for, you know, PFF College, and we've had these, like, picks of the week. And I think if Oregon holds on here, they're up like by 17. We would go 3-1 in those. But I think like our printed picks are something like 8-12 or something bad. And then the picks that we've actually bet as a group are like 57%. So it's like this, like you said, it's super variable. Whereas in the NFL, George and I were in the super contest together. We're something like 6-4 in that. It's much more indicative of how our regular record is. College football is madness, right? Madness. A lot of turnovers. All the quarterbacks, except for like five of them, suck. So it's really, you're really at like the mercy of everybody.
Yeah, that's got to make math. That's got to make math difficult. Luke, you've taken a break from laughing at Buffalo on the internet. what else you been up to? How you doing, my man?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I went to Lambeau for this last game. Now I'm still – every Saturday college football's on, and I feel bad. I'm a free agent. I have no college loyalties, and I'm waiting to be convinced. Who should my college football team be? What color should I bleed?
Which teams are in the running? Do you even have a short list yet?
Not even a little bit. Not the Gophers.
You have to root for the model. You have to make a model and root for the model. That's the best way to go.
There you go.
Because the Gophers stink.
We actually had
the Gophers as a pick. We had the Gophers as a pick today. That was a disaster. And then my alma mater, Nebraska, is 0-3 for the first time since any of our parents were probably alive.
Yeah, I went to a school without a football team, so I don't have any loyalties.
I also went to a school with no football team, so you get to cheer for whoever you want to.
We were a middling basketball school instead.
To be fair, there's a lot of students that went to the U of M, and they all went to a school without a football team.
Ooh. Oh. All right. Well, we're starting this thing off with a bang. And, you know, our favorite topic, everyone's favorite topic, it's quarterbacks. So I feel like, you know, we're going to talk about quarterbacks a little bit here because, you know, on this show, and myself included, I'm not just, you know, point the blame at and Eric and Luke and then run away. But on the show, you know, we had some skepticism in the offseason, you know, paying Kirk Cousins $84 million. And if I go to the website for which Eric works, Kirk Cousins is the fourth best quarterback in the NFL. I think that's what that list means when you have the grades and they put them in an order. That's the order of how good they are. Right now, Ryan Fitzpatrick is the best quarterback in the NFL. Kirk Cousins, number four. Let's talk about it, gentlemen.
Yeah, so let me correct you. I know you said it on purpose, but he is grading as the fourth highest graded quarterback through 4 weeks, or 2 weeks, sorry. And that's great. And as we were talking before we got on air, I think we ought to be careful about, you know, we have to remind ourselves that if that ball is intercepted, and Clay Matthews doesn't get what's justly applied to him, which is a penalty, a legacy penalty on him. then Cousins' grade probably isn't that great because he follows that play up by like with like five big time throws, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, if like all of those big time throws don't happen, the narrative is so different. And then instead of everybody taking a week two victory lap that was like, I told you he had good box score stats, we get to take a victory lap like I knew he was bad in the clutch.
So what I'm hearing you both say is Kurt Cousin is the god.
Yes.
Okay.
So
I started to apply the K at the end of his name finally.
Boom.
That's fair. Because the take is the Vikings have benefited from the fourth best quarterback play so far, right? Not necessarily anything about if that's going to continue or whatever, and our priors should probably matter. But like, we have benefited from the fourth best quarterback play, probably a lot because Kirk Cousins has thrown like six dropped interceptions.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. And Luke, that's a perfect segue into the next thing. So obviously, Kirk Cousins is playing amazing. And one of the things that came, you know, that came up on Twitter, and I think I responded to it, and both of you either liked or responded to the tweet, is that it's been established now that Kirk Cousins is great under pressure, Case Keenum, terrible under pressure. And I know we've had discussions about it here. I'm pretty sure, and I'm not pretty sure, I know Eric and George have talked about it on the forecast. But Eric, if you could just once again kind of bring us back to the conversation of QB evaluation, clean pocket, QB evaluation, you know, under pressure, which of those is stable? What should we really use for evaluation? And, you know, just kind of big picture of the things Kirk Cousins is doing right now, as Luke kind of alluded to, which of those things are stable? Which of those things, you know, potentially, you know, could be some smoke and mirrors that would regress later on in the season?
Yeah. I mean, the fact that Cousins' rating is like, I think 110 or 115 when clean is something you can bet on in the future. Right, though that's a pretty stable number, although I'd imagine that would regress too. But the fact is, passer rating is near 100 when under pressure is probably something you have to regress, right? And you know, I think about it as like, you know, last year Deshaun Watson I think was pretty good under pressure, and like the last couple of games I think his passer rating when pressured is like 8, or you know, and that's you lose to the Blaine train, but that's like not necessarily something you want to like attribute to Watson, you know. So I would say, you know, I'd probably say, you know, if players in the middle of the offensive line, like, you know, Jones continue to play poorly, you might see Cousins regress a little bit just because those under pressure stats don't stay pretty stable.
And, just, cause you mentioned Jones, then one of the things I did want to get you to I guess maybe restate for us of the things that offensive linemen do, which of those are more stable? So right now, you know, you can look at some numbers and the Vikings look okay from a pass blocking perspective, not so great from a run blocking perspective. Are those numbers that we can expect to stay relatively stable through the rest of the season, or are those, you know, volatile as well?
Offensive line plays pretty stable across the board, but pass blocking is far more so than run blocking. And then also pass blocking is more valuable too. So, it is something that, you know, if you're the Vikings, I think Jones has been okay in pass protection, pretty bad as a run blocker. The Vikings as a whole have not been particularly good. I think they have less than 1 yard before contact per carry so far this year. And that's not something, I'm that concerned about via running, but it's also something that's probably not the most stable thing in the world.
All right.
Yeah. Kirk's been under what, like 30%-ish pressure, 30-31% over the last couple games, and that's like a pretty good rate. So yeah, and by everything we know about pass blocking and those players' kind of priors going into the season, that actually makes sense that if you just kind of isolate the pass blocking, that all of those players were at least reasonable at it, except for like Rashad Hill. and I guess Tom Compton, but you know, hopefully that problem is resolved soon. Mm-hmm. But like, that is something that they could feasibly keep up till someone else gets hurt, right? And keep clean any deals. That was always the deal.
Well, and if they continue to, you know, script him into plays where he's getting rid of the ball quickly, the receivers have clearly shown the ability to get open. you know, in a very, you know, on quick routes and things like that. So, you know, I think that their offense has the goods, you know, maybe independently of their quality of play at the offensive line position. We're starting to sort of see that 2016 was far more about the play caller and maybe the quarterback, more so than the offensive line, which was truly bad, but I don't think that much worse than what it is now. Yeah, I think the Vikings offense has the goods. I mean, Diggs and Thielen have been so good. And even Treadwell has gotten open. He just hasn't caught the football. So that's been kind of disappointing.
That's probably sustainable too.
So because I'm not a nice person, I just, you know, and I doubt you have these numbers in front of you, Eric. But just question, Laquon Treadwell, for as not great as he is, where does like a receiver of his caliber kind of fall in with from like a war perspective and like with running backs?
Oh yeah, I've seen. No, so the flip side of you know, the whole you know, wide receivers are more valuable than running backs, quarterbacks, is like when a guy plays like DeShone Kizer, he's worth like -3 WAR. And when a guy plays like Laquon Treadwell, I think Treadwell is on the order of -0.5 win below replacement. So, and my daughter didn't even believe that. So, and so, you know, so it, the lever is pretty like, you know, it's just more sensitive to those positions. And so when you average like, you know, a half a yard per route run over the course of a, you know, 500 snap season, you get that kind of thing happening to you, right? So the lowest, like Asiata, those kind of guys, like they're bad and they're below replacement level, but the band is so thin that those guys are actually less bad than a guy like Treadwell would be.
Oh.
So he's hurting the Vikings more than a bad running back could possibly hurt the Vikings.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, he's – exactly. I mean, he's at the catch point, right? And not only that, like when he misses the ball at the catch point, the other team's getting the football after it, right? And so it's not a great look. You know what I'm saying?
Didn't he cause an interception? I remember him causing an interception in the Ravens game last year down in the end zone.
Yes. I don't know if he caused it per se, but Keenum threw him a fade and Brandon Carr, and he got into a jump ball and Brandon Carr won.
Well, I feel like I put that on the play callers and the court. Like we know what his measurables are. The man can't really run or jump. I mean, he's big, so I guess you throw him a fade, but that's right.
I'm not upset at Matt Asiata for the entire 2016 season.
That's not his fault.
At some point in time, it's not your fault that they're giving you the ball on 4th and 1 in out of heavy every time.
Yeah. Well, running failures are like rarely the running back's fault, as we saw time and time again with Dalvin Cook break like 2 tackles and get back to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Poor Dalvin. So based on where we are right now, I feel like, you know, there's a fair amount of reason for optimism based on everything that's going on around Kirk Cousins in terms of, you know, the weapons that we have, the scheming that we have going on in terms of getting the ball out of his hand quickly. If we're placing bets on it right now, you know, graded 4th right now, not 4th best. I was just, you know, not being nice to Eric when I said that. where would we expect kind of by end of season Kirk Cousins to end up?
I'd put it at 8.5.
Boom.
Ranking.
Luke, you taking the over or the under?
My prior was like 13th or 14th going into the season, but seeing how they're protecting him and seeing that, you know, Diggs and Thielen are really having the impact that we didn't know if like that would continue per se, and it is continuing very, very well. I was going to say like 9th or 10th. So I guess the under, but not like that confidently.
Mm-hmm.
What I really, really, really want, and Eric, I know that you have the tools at your disposal to do this, and maybe you could slip the documents to Collar and he could take them into a press conference and give them to somebody. But if they could just remember that they have awesome receivers and a really expensive quarterback and a line that can't run block and just open things up early, and just blow some teams out. I feel like that would be awesome.
Right. So this might segue nicely to the point spread for this game, right? Which is somewhere between 16.5 and 17. I've talked to a few people about this game, including Matt on the Purple Podcast. I've talked to Arif about it. I am not on this game from the Super Contest or the PFF picks, although I think PFF Greenline does like the Bills here. I think there's a real chance that the Vikings, with sitting out Everson Griffin, sitting out Dalvin Cook, not starting Elfline yet, I'm completely torn on this game from an against the spread standpoint. As you said, like, there have been games like in the Zimmer era, for example, like almost the entire, like, you know, U.S. Bank Field schedule last year was like the Vikings just covering big point spreads. But Josh Allen seems to be like the king of garbage time touchdowns. So, man, what do you guys think?
Well, I don't know.
I don't like this game at all. I would hate betting this game because 17 is so much. And I just know the Vikings to be a team to just run out clock instead of running up the score. Like, if they're up 10 in the fourth quarter, they're going to win by 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my pick on climbing the pocket was for the Vikings to win big by shutout. But I mean, I don't feel confident about that at all, because like in this last game, I mean, we showed very clearly we can go toe to toe with, you know, Green Bay, but we didn't do it until we had no choice. And I feel like a lot of that, as much as, you know, in the offseason, we were super excited about, you know, John DeFilippo coming in, and we had Shermer before, but I feel like a lot of, you know, it goes back to Zim. I feel like Zim is a conservative guy by nature and doesn't want to put his defense into bad positions. Where I look at it from the other side, where it's like, you have a great defense, which is another reason you should be able to take some more chances on offense, because that defense, every now and again, they get put in a bad position, they probably won't give up the touchdown. They might just give up a field goal or something like that, which gives you a bit more margin of error than if you had a terrible defense.
The defense is low-key, like, been way too aggressive in these first two games, and there's been a lot of opportunities that have not been realized. Or, you know, like, there in the Packers game, there was a 3rd and 3 that ended up in this, like, huge play to Jimmy Graham. Mackenzie Alexander tried to jump a flat route, and then it turned out to be, like, a more wheel kind of concept, and then he was, like, wide open. And then, you know, I think of, like, the blown coverages that resulted in, you know, Harrison Smith tried to jump a route, and it ended in a touchdown to Dante Pettis in week 1. Like, they could definitely give up some explosive plays, some, you know, big 50, 60-yard touchdowns. But if it is, like, successful plays leading into the red zone, like, if that doesn't happen, right, if Josh Allen can't connect on, you know, an open receiver, if he breaks the coverage, I don't see the Bills scoring a touchdown any other way. I don't see them scoring in the red zone.
He processes so slowly.
I know, but like, it's when a guy's so just like super painful. Wide open, he can't be that slow, right?
Like, it's like, if a guy so just blown slowly. Coverage, guy
totally open, he's got to see that.
Eric, where can I find the turnover worthy plays?
I don't know if they. I think that we used to write an article every week with the proportion of them. Let me actually look up, because
it's on Greenline. Like, for each of the games, they list it there. But I was just wondering if there was somewhere where it was like sortable that we could mess around with it. It looks like we're doing pretty well in that regard. But like you said, this is it's a good segue into kind of breaking down the game here. And I'm not gonna lie, you know, with as terrible as Buffalo has looked on the field, and even when we had you know, the gentleman on, Bradley from Bills Wire on, I mean, he had zero reasons for optimism from the perspective of someone who covers and watches that team very closely. But I know even in the offseason, we talked about a little bit where you were a bit more bullish on the Bills than really everybody else. And so when I, you know, go and kind of look at some of the things here, I'm shocked to see the ELO ranking for the Bills being where it is. And for my own understanding and knowledge, I'm going to need for you to help me understand how the ELO ranking for the Bills is 16th when neither their offense or their defense is 16th.
Yeah, so I think, like, well, for I think there was actually, to be fully disclosed here, I think there was a bug on the site earlier But early in the season, their ELO rating was like in the middle of the pack. Now we made some adjustments on the week to week stuff because, like, for example, Aaron Rodgers is not going to be reflected in the Packers ELO sufficiently. And then we did make an adjustment to sort of have the Bills ranked poorly because we knew they were going to be bad. So for my purposes, when we talked about the Bills in the offseason, I was under, you know, our projections early on were under the impression that they would have a quarterback like McCarron or Peterman regressed, you know, second year kind of thing, and not Allen. And then once we got into that Allen territory, then their win total started to, like, really, you know, dip. And so that's, I think, where it is now. But from the question you asked, there's a lot of year prior baked into that. So Buffalo had a pretty good defense a season ago. And actually their offense, from the perspective of at least running the football, as much as that is weighted, were actually, you know, representable as an offense. And so that kind of was where, you know, our heads were at. But you can be a team that has a – you can be a team that's less than the sum of your parts. Like, that's called Simpson's paradox, which is kind of cool. Whereas basically, like, the classic football or baseball example is, like, there are players who have lower bat, or where Derek Jeter has a lower batting average than them in both seasons, but over the sum of those two seasons, he actually has a higher batting average, and that's actually possible, right? So, and that's kind of where that's at. But to be fully disclosed, the ELO rankings that go up on our website are adjusted slightly from the numbers that we use in Greenline because we want to make sure that our Greenline process is automated. But for the consumer side, we don't want to tell you stuff like the Bills are better than the Packers.
Are the Bills better than the Packers? Because that would be great.
So in the actual numbers, in the actual PFF ELO rating system going into the season, the Bills are better than the Packers because we don't have a ton of historical, you know, data on getting Hall of Fame quarterback back from injury. You know what I'm saying? So we do a 10% regression to the mean when a quarterback comes back from an injury. And that was still not enough to elevate the Packers, who were pretty terrible with Hundley. The Bills were a playoff team, and weirdly, we had them at like 17th or 18th. So they weren't a top 12 team. But they were still higher in Green Bay. When we do our season-long win projections, when we do our green line projections, we have quarterback numbers in there that are like second order, and they adjust the numbers. So that's why, like, Green Bay obviously has a higher win total projection than the Bills, even though they have a tougher schedule and they have a lower ELO rating. So that's kind of like the sausage, how that's made.
Okay. I like that. So, Luke, because you have been spending quite a bit of time laughing at the Bills, how do you think the Vikings are going to go about this game? What is the plan? If it was you calling the plays on offense and defense, what is it that you would be doing to make sure that we covered this giant point spread?
Okay, so on defense, I'm taking advantage of how slow Josh Allen processes, right? And I know that. And we know that, like, we have a lot of plays in our playbook that are basically designed to disguise coverages until the snap and then, like, blitz from a surprising place. So basically force you into the wrong protection call and then create a bunch of pressure. And I, like, if I had to, like, I would put the over-under at, like, 3.5 unblocked sacks because I think that, like, Josh Allen won't be able to process quickly enough to realize, okay, the alignment's different than I thought, and this is where the hot read's going to be now. And is the hot read there? And should I throw it? Like, all of those thoughts, I just have no faith that he would be able to do it. And instead, he'll, like, run around and, like, we have Danielle Hunter, you can catch him. So I would definitely play, like, really, really aggressively. Because I also think that, like, they don't really have the weapons on offense to take advantage of hot reads. Like, Kelvin Benjamin, I don't know, is he still fat?
He's not, like, good. So skinny, fat.
Yeah, like, Xavier Rhodes will be able to take it easily. You're not going to get, like, a go. They use, like, go routes all the time. Trey Waynes is good. He can cover go routes. It's, like, his best route.
If I had to handicap him versus Jason in jiu-jitsu, Jason's minus 130.
What, Kelvin Benjamin?
Yeah.
That's a big boy. That's a big boy.
But he doesn't look like he does anything fast.
No.
I feel like you would just one time to the throat, man.
Last time we played against Kelvin Benjamin, he lost a contested catch to Marcus Sherrills.
Oh my goodness.
Right. People forget
Marcus Sherrills won a contested catch against Kelvin Benjamin and dropped an interception.
I thought the rules were that he would have to retire if something like that happened.
Monte, so he went to the Bills.
That poor guy.
But yeah, like I mean, I don't think that any of those weapons are there, and I'm also like gonna load, you know, use those blitz disguises as an excuse to like put extra men in the box, because then they're not smart enough to like check out of that when you load the box, and they'll just run right into it, and you should prosper there. And then on offense, their corner situation is abysmal, so I could definitely see this being like a Diggs and Thielen show, and forget the kind of tertiary, you know, CJ Hams and Treadwell and Tyler Conklin types.
So what I do is I run play action on first down of every single drive and throw a skinny post to one of the two wide receivers that's on the team. And I get this thing 28-0, and then I start playing for the Vikings real next game, which is next Thursday against the Rams.
I would definitely play action to Mike Boone every, like, all the time, just to prove a point.
So, so in something like that, when you're talking about, you know, covering the spread, and you mentioned there, obviously, you know, NFL is a little different. You can't only dress but so many players, but is that something that's baked into kind of your thought process or any of the numbers or processes that you do have, where, you know, a team might just bench their starters, and then how does that kind of affect, or if that's even something that we're thinking about when the line gets to be this big?
Yeah, I mean, you just look at historical numbers. So, and I actually brought this up to a friend today, and he kind of laughed, but it's actually the reason. So he was saying, you know, these models normally can't get out to 17, right? So normally a model will tell you to lay, you know, to take the points with the dog bigger than like 13, 14 points. And I pointed out that since 1975, a team that's plus 17 is 29, 20, and 3 against the spread. So the models that are being used to try to predict who's going to cover, that's the data that they have, right? And so, you know, and that's, you know, that's basically what you use. I mean, the psychology of it's tough. There are some things that you can actually use that have to do with the running game that are actually where the running game is useful. So, for example, I always think of the Wisconsin Badgers when I think of this, a team that's a lot better than another team and has a favorable matchup in the running game is more likely to cover the spread, because they can run downhill on you when they're up by 17 and, you know, continue to cover the points. That's really where the running game matters. But from the perspective of, oh, are they going to, like, I don't know, I would just use historical base rates at that point.
Does the Bills, I have like a cursory understanding that they have a good defensive line, but I don't know much detail about it, or if that's even true anymore, because I don't think Shaq Lawson's playing. But do we have a mismatch in the running game? I feel like it's almost the other way around. If they do have a good run-stopping defensive line, we might have trouble running it with the way the run blocking has been so far.
I don't think that they are strong against the run. Last season, I specifically remember them giving up like seemingly like 400 yards on the ground to the Saints. So I think that they were better in pass coverage, and, you know, with Tre'Davious White and the Poyer and the who's their other safety, trying to think, Micah Hyde, the former Packer. I think that they actually have some personnel in the secondary that's not terrible. But up front, you know, I think Jerry Hughes looks like he's playing. They do have Kyle Williams, who's been there forever. Their linebackers, they have the Edmonds guy. But, you know, beyond that, you know, Lorenzo Alexander's okay, but he's more of an edge player. I would say, you know, the run game, for what it's worth, I do think the Vikings will be able, you know, to, I don't know, I do think they'll be able to control, you know, at least hold their own in that part of the game.
Hopefully it'll be like at a point where that isn't really that important anymore, you know, where it's like, oh no, we have unsuccessful run plays, but we're up 26. So
we need that. We need it. I want a blowout. Just a proper blowout. Good teams blow teams up.
I want to hang 50 on them. I want to get them relegated and bring Alabama to the NFL.
Do it. Do it. All right. Well, I feel like we've covered as much. I mean, it's hard to really, you know, get like, unless you're Flip. Flip does a very good job at that. You know, his podcast just dropped. And he will get you fired up for just about any game ever that the Vikings play, regardless of who they're playing. They could very well be playing Alabama, and Flip would find a way to get me fired up for that game because, yeah, his enthusiasm, it's infectious. And, yeah, this game
PFF forecast, we would say enthusiasm.
Oh, Lou.
Is there any outcome to this game that will leave you like more optimistic about the Vikings than you were going into it?
If they
like, how bad do they if have they to beat
if
them?
They mollywop them the way that they need to, then yeah, like I feel like that is something that I would really like if they go in there and just completely take them apart, kind of in the vein of like the Cincinnati game last year, like just completely just take their will to play away. I feel like that's a good thing because, you know, earlier in the Zimmer era, the team didn't seem to do as well with like good things happening to them, right? Like they seem to be better as the underdogs. And so them coming out here, you know, the hot team with the fourth best quarterback in the NFL, I want to see them go out there and do work and just make the Bills not want to play anymore. And, you know, start a narrative that Josh Allen maybe should go back to the bench or something because of how badly we take him apart. I want domination, Luke. And that would make me happy. Because I'm a Vikings fan, and, you know, I'm always expecting the worst.
If they hit the over-under by themselves, I think that would be a positive thing.
Ooh.
So, like, the Ravens week one, what they did to the Bills.
Ooh.
The Chargers kind of let the Bills, I wouldn't say back into the game, but they made the score respectable at the end. I would say that would – but to me, I also think, like, if you get far enough ahead where Anthony Harris and George Iloka are the safeties in the fourth quarter – like you've done your job, you know. If Marcus Sherrills is playing left cornerback in the fourth quarter, you've done your job. Let's bring a name back from the past. If Mike Boone is getting Albert Young carries at the end of the game, like 10 of them, then I think they've done their job, right? So
I feel like all those players you just listed are better than the skill position players that the Bills are starting in the first place, though.
Yeah. So right. So, like, I mean, that's the deal.
Say it's like 30-3 at halftime, right? You feel great about it. And then the end of the game, the final score is 33-20. Would you feel okay? They didn't cover.
I would not be pleased. I would not be pleased because a better team might be able like to close that gap. And I want to see them just put their foot on the throat and just make it not. This game would make me happy if at no point after 0-0, like the game was in any sort of question about who could or might win the game.
What if that happened and then also Kirk Cousins played three quarters?
That's cool too.
Like,
I mean,
but it's 33-20 and you
does that mean Slaughter's going in? Because I mean he's gonna throw for 8 touchdowns in the fourth quarter.
What if the Vikings activated all 3 quarterbacks to own the libs?
Oh man. All right. Well, I feel like that's everything that we kind of had on tap to discuss as it pertains to the QBs, this game. Eric, how many touchdowns is Patrick Mahomes going to throw this year?
Whew. Yeah, that.
I mean, we haven't brought it up yet, but I mean, you know, your other team, also my main fantasy football league, 2 QB league, QB1 for me, holding it down right there, dynasty style. But I know you're super, super excited about your other team and their not $84 million quarterback who's playing quite well.
Yeah, I've been the thing that I don't like is that I haven't profited off of them yet. So like last week we had the Steelers -4 in our PFF picks. The first week I laid off their game against the Los Angeles Chargers. I will say what's really cool is that and I had a joke about this because somebody tweeted they asked for like the best moments in Twins history, and of course they would talk about, you know, Kirby puck it up against the plexiglass and you know, all that kind of stuff, and I was like, well, the best moment in Twins history is when Pat Mahomes spawned Patrick Mahomes and saved the NFL. And because the thing with Patrick Mahomes is like the league last year, the average over under in the league was about 1.5 different than it was, less than it was in 2016. And there were articles on 538 and all this kind of stuff, like, well, what's wrong with the league? Is it unwatchable? Blah, blah, blah. And of course, like, if you looked at it, you could say, well, you know, as much as I like Jacoby Brissett, if he's starting 15 games, there's something wrong. If Hundley and Kaiser, right, all these quarterbacks needed to get healthy, and a few of these young guys needed to hit. And
bro,
I mean, I was on Chiefs radio, and I said, you know, I was like, you know, I don't really like the Chiefs win total, but ironically, I like their Super Bowl futures, because there's a universe where Patrick Mahomes becomes the, like, one of the most dynamic quarterbacks in the NFL.
I think that that's turnover worthy plays on the season.
What's that?
Patrick Mahomes currently has zero turnover worthy plays on the season.
That's right. And he's one of a few guys. Now we have, I actually brought up the sheet. Ryan Fitzpatrick, zero turnover worthy plays. Tom Brady, Alex Smith, zero turnover worthy plays. Mitch Trubisky, 4.9 versus 1.2% big time throws. Sam Bradford, 1.5% big time throws, 4.5 turnover worthy plays. He seems to be doing well. Joe Flacco, 1.1 big time throw, 5.3 turnover worthy plays on brand. And as you guys all know, Josh Allen, 3.3% of his passes have been big time throws, 4.9 have been turnover worthy plays.
Matches his prior.
Yeah. Passer rating of 132.9 under pressure. Like, what is happening?
Right. I mean, I wrote this in the article because we had, you know, we have Arizona +5 or +6 this week. Sam Bradford's passer rating when under pressure this year is 14. His passer rating when under pressure in 2016 was second best in the entire NFL. So that shows you the instability of that metric.
Also, with losing Stefon Diggs and Adam Thielen can do for you. Yeah. Yep. All right. You might have to just do a segment every week where we let Eric just talk about Patrick Mahomes. I love how, like, you can see the pride and the happiness. Your eyes light up when you talk about Patrick Mahomes.
It was the one good draft Twitter take I've ever had. I retired after that one.
That's a good draft Twitter take, because there were a lot of people who were like, he was that year's Josh Allen.
I don't know. The numbers folks loved him. The numbers people loved them some Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, really?
I feel like there's exactly one. Yeah, I feel like there's exactly one reason why he got that label. But
oh, well.
Yeah. Yeah, numbers people liked him some Patrick Mahomes.
Yep.
You know, I mean.
I was scared that that the Chiefs would have to go up and get him, and they had to. And they had to pay a price for it.
That's going to pay off, though, right?
I mean, it's looking.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the same thing with Wentz, right? Wentz is one of those where there's a book that I own called How to Gamble If You Must. And the idea is that, you know, when your back's against the wall, you do have to make negative EV bets, and you have to make big ones, right? You can't claw your way back $10 at a time. And so you look at Howie Roseman would just reclaimed his job from Chip Kelly, probably not a ton of faith in the organization in him. He made one negative expected value bet big, and it pays off, right? Chiefs kind of in the similar vein, although they were playing with house's money, having 5 straight winning seasons, kind of the same idea. There are some situations where big negative EV bets, you know, are, you know, doable, right? Cause they could have still gone back to Alex Smith. Or, and also necessary in the case of Howie Roseman and with Carson Wentz.
Wasn't there some article or some book or something that came out about the Eagles, like, in your organization, and a bunch of, like, inside sources basically saying that, like, yeah, they know they got lucky.
Yep. I think it just came out in either The Athletic or The Ringer this week. It was a really great read. I think it is cool to, like, get underneath the hood a little bit with some of these, decisions, because they're not trivial, for sure.
And that's, you know, as a non-Eagles fan, that's something that I hate to hear, because it's what you'd want to hear from your own team, and it's what so few NFL teams ever do, is admit that, like, there's luck involved, and that, like, we're not always the greatest about, like, they don't, like, the Eagles, like, yeah, we did some things, we got lucky on them, but the numbers gave us a bit of an edge, and we know that they could swing the other way. Like, they seem to actually understand what it is they're doing versus getting kind of doing what every other NFL team does, which is start to, you know, believe, you know, their own hype and think that they really are just smarter than everyone, and, you know, all their draft picks are going to be great and yada, 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 yada. And I hate it.
The Eagles are good for football.
They are good for football, but I hate
them. That's why I'm rooting for them in spite of everything. Go Eagles. They're good for football.
I also, Baker Mayfield having that game, like, it's going to be a point where you're not going to be able to tell analytics, Twitter, anything. Dude. You're not going to be able to tell them anything come draft time because Baker Mayfield, not QB1, not for the Neil tape watchers. Not
Hornsby was wearing a Browns Road white number 6 around the office on Friday. And we had the Jets, which was a really actually a good pick because we had, you know, what's his face, Taylor at quarterback. And of course, when Baker comes in, we stop rooting for the pick and start rooting for the brand.
Baker. Oh, loved it. All right. Well, gentlemen.
What's happening to the Seahawks is another W for but an L for Seahawks Twitter, which encompasses a lot of the same.
Which is going to – we might win the battle analytics Twitter, but we might lose Twitter if the Seahawks Twitter gets any more ammunition. Oh, and burn the whole thing down.
That's probably good for life.
Poor Russell.
Poor Russell.
Poor Russell, poor Andrew. Anywho. Maybe that's for another podcast. Gentlemen, as always, a pleasure. Thanks for coming on and chopping it up with me on this Saturday evening. Eric, I will let you get back to the 17 games. I'm sure you're sweating out right now. Luke, I guess it's the early evening for you. So, enjoy your evening. Have fun.
Go San Diego State.
Is that my team now?
That could be your team.
Minus 11.
Are they the Aztecs? Are those the Aztecs, Eric?
They are the Aztecs. San Diego's a great town. Great city.
You got a team, Luke.
San Diego State. Okay.
All right. There we go. All right. Well, gentlemen, y'all have a good one. Listeners, thanks for sticking with us. And we'll talk to you soon. Have a good one.